This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on a Throwback Thursday. Good to be with you as we get ready for the NBA draft tonight. Victor Wembanyama will go number one to San Antonio. Everybody's known that, and not only did everybody know that, when San Antonio won the draft, the representative started screaming and celebrating because he knew what he was getting. This guy is a player that every single person that has watched him, studied him, have been actively interested in what he is doing over in France, is saying he is going to change the NBA. Kevin Durant said the league is in trouble when this kid gets here. This is a guy that could be, in 4 or 5 years, we could be talking about him as one of the greatest to ever play the game. That's high, high, high praise. And normally, I'm a skeptical guy with that. I'm a little old school. I'm more like, well, I'll wait and see. We'll see it. I've been down this road in other sports before. I've been down this road where I've seen it actually take place, and then I've seen it not take place. So I'm more or less like, all right, you know what? Let me wait and see. But I'm going to be honest. I don't watch any Victor Wembanyama games. I see a lot of the highlights. I've seen a lot of the YouTube clips. In a world of social media where everything has gotten down to the basic singular thing that you can see to make a point, I've seen plenty of those. Have I watched an entire game? Have I talked to his coaches? Have I talked to his players around him? No, I'm taking the word of people whose job it is to sort of know these kind of things. And what they're saying, all of them, there is not one that has descended from the idea that this guy is a game-changing player for the NBA. But I want to bring this up in a larger context, because last summer was the 30th anniversary of the Dream Team, the Barcelona Olympics, and the team that really set all of this in motion. If you go back to the year that the Dream Team went to Barcelona, so the 1992 season where the Chicago Bulls won the championship, at that time in the NBA, there were 23 international players from 18 countries on NBA rosters. Now, that was the start. That was 31 years ago. Just last year, there were 109 international players from 39 countries on league rosters. The impact of the 1992 Dream Team is not going to be lost on what we see tonight. This is yet another international player that is coming into this league. We just saw an international player in Nikola Jokic, who was the 41st pick in the draft, but nevertheless a draft pick, win the NBA championship and also have won two MVP awards during his career. The list is huge of players who have had a huge impact on this league that have come from the international, the international pool. And a lot of them were, especially in the early days, a lot of them were influenced by that 92 Dream Team. And therefore, they became influences for other players down the line. Victor Wembanyama, of course, is 19 years old, and he wasn't even a thought back 31 years ago. But nevertheless, what he lives in and what he experiences and what he knows about basketball can be directly traced back to that time in Barcelona when the NBA's best were just set loose against the international field. Now, I have to remind people that when they voted on this, the United States Olympic Committee voted against the idea of pros playing in the Olympics. There was a lot of feeling like it would have been a mockery to the game. There was something about it that, we're going to send Michael Jordan over there? What are you, crazy? What do you mean? But the idea was that the international community knew what it wanted. And what it wanted was, I'm not going to give it all the credit for this huge foresight, but what it really wanted was some of their better professional players, whether they're in the NBA or not, to represent them in the Olympics. But there were people at the time that saw the larger picture, which was, we want to create an environment where we know what really, really, really good basketball is, right? Now, the NBA didn't have a vote in this. The NBA was just a byproduct of this, had sort of been kind of pushing for it. They, of course, wanted their players on the international stage. They wanted their players in the Olympics. And don't get me wrong, the NBA could have said no. They could have said, you know what? Even though you're letting pros in, they actually are under contract with our owners, and we don't need them over there. You know, they could have done that, but of course they weren't going to do that. That was David Stern had... he had eyes on the prize. He knew what this was. He knew how much marketing this would mean to the league and how much this would spread around the globe if he could put together, or at least the Olympic Committee could put together a team that was just dominant with NBA stars. But that is what this, what that ended up being. That's sort of the byproduct of what you're seeing tonight, is that a young man from France is not only going to be the number one pick in the draft, they are talking about him in a way that is going, he's going to change the game. He is going to be so dominant that there is if he stays healthy, he's going to go down in history as one of the greatest players in league history. That's a way they, that's the way they're projecting him. Now, if you go back 30 years, and I know, look, we've had Dirk and we've had all these players. Yao Ming is coming into the league, all the international players, right? And the list goes on and on. Manu Ginobili, all of those guys. But think about what that kind of conversation would have had back in the 80s and 90s. A kid that didn't play in a, on, a, on an American college team being a dominating player, right? I mean, that's in a remarkable 30-year transition from one key event that went down in the summer of 1992 to what we're seeing tonight and almost every single year in this draft. The international players know how to play basketball. And they know how to play basketball because they're a byproduct of players who saw what the Dream Team was doing and wanted to be bet really, really good at it. It really opened the door. Even though there were international players in the league, a lot of players were starting to get really motivated to get to the NBA. Young international players were really excited about where they could go. And, of course, that has a trickle-down effect. Now, I think I'd love to see Victor Wembanyama do great things. I never root against a young man in his pursuit of excellence. But like I said, it's difficult in a social media world of clips and videos where you get the best. But I'm telling you that these guys that have been watching him and watch him play are very, very excited for what he's going to bring to the San Antonio Spurs. And his coronation will be tonight. Now, after that, Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller will go number two. Whoever doesn't go two is likely to go three. We've been talking about this all week. Damian Lillard could be on the trading block. We don't know. Zion Williams is now even more unlikely to be traded by New Orleans. It looked bleak yesterday when we were talking about it. It's even more bleak today. There's more people saying, yeah, it ain't going to happen. He ain't going to be on the move. But yesterday there was a big move. It was a three-team trade. There was so two parts to this. There was a three-team trade that was on the table that involved the Celtics, Washington, and the Clippers. And Malcolm Brogdon was involved in it, Kristaps Porzingis to Celtics, all of that. But then that was taken off the table. And then the Celtics in the late night ended up getting Memphis in this deal. So now Kristaps Porzingis, Washington Wizards center and the former unicorn when he was playing for the Knicks, is going to Boston. Marcus Smart is going to Memphis. And Tyus Jones is going to Washington. Also involved in that, the Celtics get a first-round pick from Memphis. They also get a protected first-round pick from the Grizzlies that they got from Golden State. And then the Wizards also get Danilo Gallinari, who never played for the Celtics, and Mike Muscala, who barely played for the Celtics. They're part of that trade, too. So that's the big three-team trade. Now, I like Kristaps Porzingis, and I think Kristaps Porzingis had quietly a really, really good year last year for Washington. I know a lot of people weren't paying attention to the Wizards. They weren't that good, but Kristaps Porzingis was having a very good year. His biggest problem is he can't stay on the court. He can't stay on the court. He tore an ACL. He missed 100 games. He is not the same player he was when he was lighting it up as a young 20, 21-year-old for the Knicks. Remember, everybody was talking about how great he was, all that stuff. Went to Dallas and Washington. But giving up Marcus Smart was a big deal for the Celtics, and it's a big deal for Brad Stevens to have agreed to pull this trigger. Smart is their point guard, and he's the heart and soul of that team. He's a guy that wears his hair green because of how much he loves being a Celtic. He's very active in the community. Now, he took a little bit of a step back defensively last year, but still, he's one of the top defensive players that team had. Now, there's a lot more options for the Celtics with Kristaps Porzingis. They can do pick and roll, all that stuff, and they can post him up. The Celtics weren't really doing that. And Al Horford's getting old. He's going to be 37, and he really can't do much at a certain point with a 37-year-old on a consistent basis, night in, night out. And I think Porzingis upgrades that position. But they're going to miss Marcus Smart. They really are. They're going to miss Marcus Smart. But I think there was a feeling in Boston that the identity of the team had to change. And I think that they went, you know what? There's got to be something else other than Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And I think we can add a guy that was averaging 26 points a game, 27 points a game last year for a bad Washington team. But if you can keep Kristaps Porzingis healthy, this actually might be good for Boston. Again, I like Porzingis. I'm still on his side. I know he's not what he used to be, but I think when he is healthy, he's still a very good player. And, of course, this means more to Washington as they are trying to dump everything and trying to get expiring deals and whatnot and draft picks as they are trying to rebuild. But Memphis is getting a very good player, Marcus Smart. Again, took a little bit of a step back defensively, but Memphis will embrace him. The Grizzlies need him because of Ja Morant's absence of 25 games. Desmond Bane is not going to be on that team anymore. So they need a leader. They need somebody that's going to embrace what it means to be a Grizzly. And I think Marcus Smart will fit that bill. But Brad Stevens and Marcus Smart had one of those very special player-coach relationships. Marcus Smart could yell at Brad Stevens. He had a lot of passion. Stevens completely understood where he was coming from, sometimes even agreed with him, said, you know what, maybe I did deserve to get yelled at certain points. When he was the coach and Marcus Smart was the young player in Boston, they really formed a bond. So I know this must have been hard for Stevens, who's now as president of operations, to have kind of pulled the trigger on this deal because obviously – having a special relationship. But sometimes you can see the landscape, and the landscape is we've got to go in another direction. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Good Thursday to you. When we come back, we'll have our Throwback Thursday. And we're going back a little bit, good little ways. Something also that happened on this day. We'll talk about that coming up as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Regulators. We regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1994 is our Throwback Thursday today. It's welcome back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Because we are talking about the anniversary of the United States Columbia World Cup game, which was won by the U.S. 2-1.
Yep.
Andres Escobar scored an own goal to make it 1-0. Ernie Stewart would then score again for the United States. Gave him a 2-0 lead. Colombia then would get a goal, but they would not win. And then a number of days later, while he was in Medellin, Colombia, back in early July, a week or so later, Andres Escobar was shot.
And murdered. Yep.
So it was... I remember because I had just gotten into this business, so I'd been working at this radio station, and that summer was crazy with OJ and everything like that.
It was really nuts.
It was really nuts. But the United States hosting the World Cup was a really big deal. My boss went to a World Cup match in one of the World Cup matches in Foxborough, and he came back and he was like going crazy about it, how great it was. Or maybe it was a preliminary match. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, he was talking about it. He was all into it. I mean, he was – so nevertheless, it was my job to, like, get cuts, highlights, you know, whatever I could find from down the satellite wire for the World Cup. He was really, really into it. And, you know, I was starting to be like, all right, it's in the United States. All right. And I remember when this took place, there was a host of a news talk show on our station – and he made a joke about Escobar getting killed for this, that he was going to get killed for this.
Yeah. I think everyone did.
Everyone kind of thought Colombia was, you know, drug wars and drug kingpins. And it was, but it was, you know, but it was like, oh my God, they're going to kill him for this. They're going to. And then sure enough, a week or so later, somebody did. So,
I mean, because at that time, Colombia was considered a favorite to win the World Cup. I mean, one of the top. I mean, I don't know if they ever would have, but they were looked upon as, hey, this team should make the quarterfinals. Maybe they'll make the semifinals. You know, but that's where they were destined to. They weren't supposed to lose to a United States team that got into the tournament because they were hosting it.
Right, exactly.
You know, the United States had got into the tournament in 1990, had earned their way into the tournament in 1990 on a hope and a prayer. Prior to that, they hadn't really reached a tournament in nearly 50 years.
It was, if you watched the two Escobars, That was the documentary. It was one of the early 30 for 30s.
Yeah.
I think it was in the first year of the 30 for 30 films.
It was fantastic.
The whole thing is in Spanish.
Yeah.
The whole thing is in Spanish. You have to read the whole entire documentary if you don't speak Spanish. But it was riveting. I mean, absolutely riveting.
I mean, to the point, like, Pablo Escobar was, I mean, he put in so much money into that.
So much money.
Into that team. And even after that game. You know, all the Colombian players were like, don't go home.
Yeah, they were getting death threats and whatnot.
Because they still had another game. Yeah. I mean, this was the second game for both of them. And there was still one more game after that. I believe Colombia did win that game, but it didn't matter at that point.
Right, right.
Like, it was just because they had lost their opener. No, I think they had tied their opener. They had lost to the United States. And then I think they won, but it was based on points, and it was like, well, it doesn't really matter what you do from here on out.
Yeah, it was so surreal because, again, we were, you know, if you remember the summer, if you were around the summer, it was like, it's like when a movie comes out, like a big movie comes out, and all the products have that movie on it. Like, you can buy Lay's chips with, like, Darth Vader on it.
Yeah.
And everything. Like, the U.S. was, they were marketing this. This was huge. I mean, this was the United States hosting these games. It was a huge deal. Like, everybody wanted to be in on it. So the United States beating Colombia, it just felt like, whoa, that wasn't supposed to happen. Whoa, what is this? Yeah, okay. So you started knowing the names of the players, right? Tony Meola, you started knowing these guys and whatnot. You're right. There was with Colombia. It was they had lost, I think, Romania at the beginning of the of the thing, and then
Romania actually went on pretty far that year.
And so they were in trouble playing the United States because it was their second game, and so they were like, "Oh, we better, you know, we got to take care of this because we can't go that far down in group play." And then Escobar's own goal ends up being the problem for them. What I liked about the two Escobars, what I really liked about that documentary was, well, the two Escobars are Pablo Escobar and Andres Escobar. And Pablo Escobar's story is sort of interwoven, obviously, with Andres Escobar because, again, his interest in narco soccer and all of that. But there was a point in the documentary because Pablo Escobar had been, I don't want to say captured and killed. He was killed in December of 93. So he was dead. And so I think his sister had said if Pablo was still alive, he would have never let that happen. He would have never let Andres Escobar get killed because he loved that team. He still loved those guys. And yet there was a lot of chaos in Colombia in the city. And one other drug lord had lost a lot of money on the match and his bodyguard ended up shooting on.
I mean, when you watch the replay of it, it's just an unfortunate circumstance. Like most own goals,
right?
I mean, he's defending. He was one of the top defenders in the world at that point. I think he was playing for Barcelona or Real Madrid at that time. And just just one of the top guys in the world. And it just he went in to slide for the ball to stop it from crossing into the box. It just hit his leg wrong and ricocheted into the goal. The goalie had no chance.
Yeah, what a crazy game.
Now, fortunately and unfortunately, I was at that game.
You were at that game?
I was at USA versus Colombia, face painted. I actually got into the LA Times. My buddy and I got into the LA Times
nice.
With our face painted. But all the goals in that game happened on the opposite side of the field because we were behind one goal.
Was that at the Rose Bowl?
That was at the Rose Bowl,
yeah.
Yeah, we saw two games that year, and the other game that we went to was Cameroon versus Sweden, which was just a fun party.
No, that's great.
But yeah, USA versus Colombia, it was the delayed reaction all the time because the goal happened on the far side of the field because we were sitting behind one goal. The goal happened on the far side of the field, but you can see like the stands, like, you know, almost coming all the way around to you, just cheering and hollering and going nuts. And then by the time it got to us, the people who saw the goal, they had already stopped cheering. So we were like cheering, and then watching it on replay, like, oh my God, they scored.
Well, like I was saying earlier, I remember my boss, my sports director, Rich Levine, he was all in on this, man. He was all
in
on Team USA.
It was a great thing. I mean, that's what jump started the soccer movement in the United States. I mean, soccer had been a growing sport anyways. This just, threw it tenfold.
So that is our Throwback Thursday today. 28 years ago? 28 years ago?
Yeah.
Look at you, Ron. That's 28 years ago.
That's
why.
Yeah, you know that because 94 is the year I graduated from high school. So, you know, that means 30 years removed is coming up sooner than I would like.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. And by the way, if there's, I brought up the 30 for 30, the two Escobars. There was another 30 for 30, June 17th. You and I were just chatted about this. Yeah. That was, if you haven't seen that one, if you really want to know what the summer of 94, or at least that part of the summer of 94 was about, the summer that date is a very historical date for sports because there were so many things that were going on that day. And the World Cup going on in the United States was one of them. But OJ's chase, the Knicks Rockets NBA Finals,
yep.
Arnold Palmer playing in his last U.S. Open. That was at Oakmont Country Club. I think the Rangers on that date were celebrating their Stanley Cup win over the Vancouver Canucks. And so there was kind of a huge, huge date. Because there was just so many things going on, and OJ's chase was probably the bigger one.
That was the main thing.
When I think about the early times of my career, I was working overnights at this radio station in Manchester, New Hampshire, and a part of my job was putting together sports clips, news clips. It's kind of it was from midnight to 6 a.m. and it was just the satellite feed would come down and. It was always like OJ stuff, World Cup stuff, like anything that I could scramble. Yeah. It was such a wild summer of all of that stuff.
Just real quick, for the World Cup part of it, that was the commencement. That was when the World Cup started. Yeah.
On the 17th?
So, yeah, the events occurring that day, I had to look it up. I mean, besides OJ and the police chase, which is obviously that was the big news of the day.
That was the biggest one.
Like you said, Arnold Palmer, the World Cup starting, New York Rangers celebrating. Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and also on that day, Ken Griffey Jr. tying Babe Ruth's record for most home runs before June 30th.
Wow, what a day. You can't just throw it all together, man.
Yeah. The only thing missing, you know what? NFL missed out.
The NFL missed out. They couldn't find anything in the news. Who was the commissioner back then? Was it Paul Tagliabue back
Probably.
Then? He couldn't call anybody. Fire a coach. I don't care. Prove a trade. Anything. Get us in on this party, click. Excellent.
I mean, by the end of the day, you're seeing that all these things are happening. It's like, we need something.
That's right.
It's going to be remembered.
Need something.
We're going to make a 30 for 30 on it someday. We need to have something in it.
All right. More on the NBA draft tonight in the Kristaps Porzingis Celtics Wizards Grizzlies trade as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. By the way, let's update everybody on our sub talk. We've been talking sub all week. We've crossed over, right?
I think so, yeah. I haven't really seen the news talk about it too much. I think it's like that realization of, they're not going to find it.
I remember going to bed last night thinking, okay, the rescue, because my wife was just kind of watching TV and we got a little bit of the news. I said, all right, the rescue thing that we talked about was on its way. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to bed. When I wake up, if they haven't found that sub, they're dead.
Yeah.
If I haven't found, and I'm sad to say they did not find the sub. That's it. They got. I mean, there was a point, it was 5 a.m. Eastern time that they said that's how much oxygen they had left. We've crossed over that. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, they've all perished.
I mean, unless they found another way to get a couple more hours of oxygen. But, I mean, it's literally you're finding a needle in a haystack.
Right. At what point?
Like everyone's been pointing out, it's like it's not that they didn't know where the Titanic went down.
Yeah.
Because they did. They knew where the Titanic went down. I mean, they rescued the boats. They knew in 1912. Where the Titanic went down. It's just that it's so deep there, you can't find it.
It's like Tom Hanks.
Yeah, it took like 85 years.
Like Tom Hanks, where he's like doing the math on the island. He goes, size of Texas.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, they're not going to find you.
You know, no matter how many crisscross. And this is different. I mean, If it was on the surface, maybe you'd have a chance to find it.
Sure.
But the fact that you're 2 miles deep.
Oh, God, that ocean is so scary, man.
Yeah.
It's such a scary place.
I mean, it's pitch black down there. It's, you know, I mean, nothing can survive down there.
You and I were talking about this, and this is all, in all seriousness, you almost hope that they implode it so they have more instant
yeah.
death.
Yeah. Because now that we've crossed the threshold.
By the suffocation in the dark.
Would be, yeah.
In the cold. Because the I mean, it's still cold down
there. Well, I mean, you got to figure that if there was this one malfunction probably led to another malfunction, yeah. Which led to a malfunction. I mean, you know, so you're in the dark. I mean, it's pitch black.
Just horrible. Absolutely.
You just hope, yeah, you just hope that, you know, it's like it was more instantaneous. Like there was a little breach or something.
And by the way, people, be better on Twitter. Just because they were rich doesn't mean they deserve this death.
No one deserves
that. They're not criminals. You know, listen, if you want to cheer a dictator who murdered half his population and they that's fine. I'm okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. But just because somebody's a billionaire and they didn't kill anybody and they're not criminals, they just made money and they bought to be on this sub, that to be happy they're dead is silly. I mean, people on Twitter are heartless.
No, they are. Well, that's Twitter muscles. You can hide behind an avatar that has nothing to do with you, a name that has nothing to do with you, and say whatever you want.
Yeah, it makes you feel.
And that's what happens.
That's right.
No, but that was my other question I asked you during the break, too. It was like, is this adventure over?
Right.
Meaning, what I mean by it, you know, is that, you know, diving down to see the Titanic or that whole thing, is that done? I mean, obviously, for the time being, it's going to be. I mean, they're holding off.
I first said yes, but then I started going, "Oh no, wait, hold on." There'll be somebody that'll come along and they'll go, "No, no, no. We didn't use cheap products from Home Depot to build our
camping world.
We are camping world. We did not use. We went. We've got a state of the art submersible that is. It has everything you want. It has all of these features. It has tracking. It is whatever it is. It has backups. I don't know. I don't know the science. So I'm talking way above my head. But it has everything
it's
that you want. Right. I mean, and it's tethered. That's another good one. And they'll say, and somebody will go, sure. Because people die on Mount Everest all the time.
Yep.
And yet people pay lots and lots of money to go back up on that mountain. There is an adventurous spirit that is in people. That they want to go do this. I remember I've watched like so many of these documentaries of people like cross country skiing across Antarctica and stuff. And it's like, why? What are you doing? It's gonna be death all around you. Like, what are you talking about? But people have an adventurous spirit, and I think if you know the science, and this is the thing. These guys were involved in this, except for the 19-year-old son. I think he just was on with his dad. But the two other billionaires, they weren't like, honey, what do you want to do today? You want to go to the... They were like involved in the company. They had invested in the company. They were interested in doing this because they were putting their money into the company. But I think there is an adventurous spirit that's still out there, and somebody will go, we're going to do it 1,000 times better than that old company that was basically sending a tube down there with nothing. And, we're not going to be piloting it with the video game system. We're actually going to have a real submersible that's got every safety measure you could ask for and then some. And I think they'll be back. So, but I don't know who's going to be the first one to try to do this again.
Yeah. Is this going to be something where government gets more involved now? Like,
yeah,
it gets more government regulated? Because, I mean, this thing wasn't government regulated. It was just pretty much, here's a private company that says we'll send you down to the bottom in a tube.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And you, it's really amazing how much trust you put into things like that. I mean, I would have believed that thing, like if somebody offered me a chance to go down there, I wouldn't go because I get claustrophobic. I'm not doing it. I don't even like airplanes. But I wouldn't go. But let's say I did. I would have put my faith in the company that you don't want anything bad to happen to me, so this has got to be as state-of-the-art as possible, right? You know what I mean? It's like airlines. I mean, airlines don't want planes to crash, so they maintain them. So that's why they rarely crash.
Have you ever seen the biography of Hamish Harding?
Oh, the guy who's the billionaire?
The billionaire. Yeah, the billionaire. I mean, the things that he has done. I mean, he made his money in aviation. I don't know, something like that. But he's been to the South Pole. Right? Wow. He actually went to the South Pole with Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin went to the South Pole?
Yeah.
What kind of life is Buzz Aldrin have? That's amazing.
I know. And so, I mean, he's been to the South Pole.
Once you went to the moon, there was nothing else that you could do that would make you go, eh.
Well, I guess go to the furthest place from the moon.
I might as well. Why don't I go to the South Pole? That's awesome.
Go to the South Pole. He's circumnavigated the Earth. And he's in the Guinness Book of Records for circumnavigating the Earth via the North and South Pole. It was a flight that took 46 hours. God, I couldn't have done that.
No chance.
He's been to Challenger's Deep, which is the deepest point of the Mariana Trench. And he went up into space on Jeff Bezos' spaceship.
Rocket ship?
Yeah.
Wow.
This billionaire has done it all. He was looking for the next great adventure, and now he's stuck somewhere near the Titanic.
His doom was being in a make-your-own submersible kit that came down to a video game controller. That's awful.
But I mean, you want to know the good things he's been doing? He supplied the jet to bring 8 wild cheetahs from Namibia to India.
Oh, okay.
Because I guess cheetahs used to roam India but went extinct there.
Oh, so he was like, let's repopulate.
So he was reintroducing the cheetah population in India. So
that's
he was doing
your money.
Yeah, he was doing good things.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we've been talking about this all week.
It's been fascinating.
I've been obsessed with it.
I guess you're just kind of hoping for that positive news. Like, you got the positive news yesterday, the banging.
Yeah.
And then people coming out, it's like, well, we don't really know what the banging is.
Right.
They were not saying it's them banging. That could be the sub just like rolling on the ground. We don't know.
Yeah, it's been my overall obsession this week is watching a sub 2023.
And it'll be gone. I mean, starting next week, I think the next thing we'll hear about it is, hey, they found it. And maybe it's 80 years from now. I don't know.
They might find it. They're still looking for it's still doing the recovery. You might find it, and it'll be, oh, yeah, by the way, remember that sub?
Yeah.
From like 3 months ago? Yeah, they found it. Yeah. Oh, God. It's terrible. All right, again, NBA draft tonight. Victor Wembanyama will go number one. As I was saying earlier, everyone's been buzzing about him. I hope he lives up to this expectation, man, because when you've got when you've got Kevin Durant saying the league's in trouble with this kid, like that's a lot of pressure, man, for a 19-year-old.
That people are saying we haven't seen this much hype since LeBron James.
That's right. That's right. You think about like Yao Ming, you think about players like that who had that sort of international number one overall pick sort of presence. And I saw last night, I think it was Jay Billis last night say he is the most anticipated draft pick even more than LeBron. About what he can do. And I thought that was unbelievable praise. It was something about highest level, even more than LeBron. And I was like, that's crazy. Because I remember the LeBron hype. I remember all of that. LeBron in high school and everything. But he's so 100% in on this guy changing the game. A 7'3 point center that can shoot threes, defend the three, block threes. Can go, I mean, just like a gazelle. This is what starts tonight when the San Antonio Spurs change their franchise with Victor Wembanyama. We'll continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. And it is a throwback Thursday as we go back to 1994.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Is this Soundgarden?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Black Hole Sun, 1994. Throwback Thursday. On this date, the U.S. beat Colombia at the World Cup, and Andres Escobar, who had an own goal, was murdered about a week plus back in Colombia. Big moment in the World Cup. So real quick, before we get back to basketball, so the U.S. is hosting the World Cup. What year?
2026.
So it's got to be, I just, from an outsider looking at it, it's got to be night and day from 94, right? I mean, we've got an MLS. We've got a more educated public on the sport. We're more invested in the sport. It's got to be like a night. Gonna be like a night.
I think we'll be more competitive.
Yeah, more competitive.
I mean, in 94, there was a good team. It was, you know, a ragtag bunch of guys. I mean, you know, but they all became household names, like you say, or not, maybe not household names, but you knew who they were, like Tony Meola, Alexi Lalas, Marcelo Balboa.
Colby Jones?
Colby Jones was on that team. Eric Winalda. I mean, all these guys are legends in the game. Ernie Stewart, I mean, getting the goal to seal the victory against Colombia. They're all legends. They're all considered. They've all held high-ranking positions in the United States. And it was, you know, I remember the stadiums being full, but I think in some areas it wasn't. And and it was hard to say, hey, you know, we're going to fill this football stadium or that football stadium. Now, in 2026, I mean, ticket prices are going to be astronomical.
I think it's going to be the hottest ticket. If your city is hosting these things, it'll be the hottest ticket in that area.
Yeah. And it's going to be played. I don't know what they're going to do because I know, like, I know Houston is holding it. NRG Stadium will be hosting a few games. And I know that that is turf, but I don't know the ruling. I thought they had to play on grass.
I did too.
So I think they might be having a way to bring in grass.
Maybe so.
I don't know.
It's 2023. I mean, we could figure this out.
Oh, they can figure. Yeah, they'll figure it out. Even if it's terrible grass, they'll come in and just lay it down.
So yeah, it's going to be. I'm looking forward to it. But again, I do remember in '94. I remember people like I've said many times. If you're a sports journalist or a sports media member, and you're doing the nobody cares about soccer thing, that's old. That is old and should be thrown out. That's over. If you have not been paying attention to these MLS stadiums that are starting to fill up, everywhere, Nashville and St. Louis, some of the newer MLS franchises, they're some of the hottest tickets in the city to go to. And so that's an old man thing. I know some people still don't care about it, but the idea that the whole country doesn't is ridiculous. When it comes, it'll be amazing. But I remember in 94, people didn't know how the format was. I mean, they didn't know.
No,
they
had no clue.
What does this mean? What do we do? We got to do what? How do we win? So it was like, it was an education that we all kind of needed on, at least not necessarily the sport per se, but maybe how the World Cup operated, right? Like how, all right, so we're in this group, then you play, then okay, I get it now. So, all right, back to Victor Wembanyama for a second. So there's been a lot of comparisons to Victor Wembanyama. When people say, how do you compare him to who, right? And so they say, well, is he like LeBron James? Well, I mean, he's 7'4", and he's tall and he's thin, but they're talking about impact. So if they make the comparison to LeBron James, they're talking about impact. What about Kevin Durant? Same kind of thing, just tall, thin, lanky, that kind of. Kevin Garnett. Ralph Sampson was another one that came to mind. But poor Ralph Sampson never really had the NBA career that people thought he was going to have coming out of Virginia because he was really, he suffered a lot of injuries. But David Aldridge at The Athletic has a very good comparison if you really know Victor Wembanyama's game. And it's not James, it's not Durant, it's not Ralph Sampson. He's saying if you really want to find the athlete that Victor Wembanyama compares to, it's Shohei Ohtani, because Shohei Ohtani is doing things in baseball we've never seen before. He's doing things on the mound and at the plate that we haven't seen before. We've seen good pitchers be good hitters. There's been plenty of good hitters in the history of the game, but none like Shohei Ohtani. We've seen, you know, we've seen guys that can hit home runs, the guys that can get a high batting average, and maybe they pitch in the National League and they're okay. They're good. They're better at one thing or the other, but we've not seen a guy where he's very, 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 very good on the mound. He's very, very good at the plate swinging a bat. And that's what they're saying about Victor Wembanyama. This guy on the perimeter is outstanding. He can hit the three. He can defend the three. In the paint, he can block shots. He can get to the rim. He can dribble the basketball as good as point guards. This is the comparison to what the Spurs are going to be getting tonight. It's not necessarily a straight-up comparison to basketball. It's a straight-up comparison to somebody that is doing something that we don't see that in that sport. Like Shohei Ohtani striking guys out and hitting home runs in the same game. We have a player that is coming into this league that is going to change the way a lot of people are going to be looking at that big man position. I said this about Nikola Jokic, and we were talking about him with the Nuggets. People are talking about Nikola Jokic and his, and how what kind of big man he, you know, we said, look, he's where does he go on the list of big men in the NBA? Where would you rank him? I mean, he's just two-time MVP, dominating postseason, triple-doubles, all of that. How does he compare to Kareem? How does he compare to other guys in the NBA? Is it a little too early because he only got one championship? But I said, look, I remember, look, one thing that Nikola Jokic is benefiting from is the fact that the big man in the NBA is being asked to do a lot more things than it was back in the day. You get the ball to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he's not looking to pass it. If you can successfully get the ball to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he's going to try to score. That's his goal. That's where the offense was. If you're Magic, you're trying to facilitate it down to the captain, and if he can, and once he gets it, he's not looking to kick it out to James Worthy. He's not looking out to kick it out to Michael Cooper or back to Magic. Whereas Jokic was benefiting from a new kind of game, a new kind of thought process, which is, hey, yeah, I'm in this position. I'm the five, but you know what? I can kick it out to the four if he's open on the wing. I can kick it back out to the point if he's open at the top. All of these things are still open to me. And oh, by the way, yes, I can get to the basket. And Victor Wembanyama at 7'3", 7'4". And I've seen both of these, by the way, until I actually measure this kid. I don't know how. Some say he's 7'4", some say he's 7'3". Maybe the answer is somewhat in the middle. But when you see a guy that tall, and he's taking fallaway jumpers on the baseline, and he's coming down the court dribbling the basketball, and when you're 7'4", and you're dribbling the basketball, the distance between your hand and the ball can be pretty large, so somebody can swat it away. But he's not letting anybody swat it away. He's dribbling it down, crossing hands as a 7'4" center, as a point guard. This is going to be incredible to watch. It really is going to be incredible to watch. And here's the thing. You may root against him because you don't want the Spurs to win the division or the conference, and I would get that. You're kind of hoping maybe the hype is a little much. But I take it from a guy two steps back and go, I would not want this kid to fall flat on his face. If we've got this level of talent, if we've got a guy that can do all these things, I really would love to see it in the NBA. I would love to see it firsthand. I would rather not see a disappointment. Go back 4 years ago with Zion Williamson. Remember how much of an impact player he was going to be for the New Orleans Pelicans when he was going to be drafted number one? And what have we gotten so far? Has it been disappointing? Yeah, because injuries have crept in, and his unwillingness to utilize good rehabilitation techniques has kept him off the floor. But when he's on the court, he does do great things. When he's on the court, he is a force. He is a presence. New Orleans wins basketball games. He's just not on the court enough. And if Victor Wembanyama goes down the road of Ralph Sampson, it's going to be disappointing because Sampson was disappointing. Yeah, he did lead the Rockets to a NBA Finals against the Celtics in 86. But Sampson's career was just knee injuries after knee injuries, just injuries after injuries. And he just didn't keep himself healthy enough to warrant the kind of stellar NBA career that he was projected to have based on his dominance in college. And yes, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, they've lived up to that hype, right? Kevin Garnett lived up to that hype. But some players don't. Some players just, the hype is too much. And here's the thing. When you have the NBA guys, the NBA media, you know, the guys whose only job is to cover this league, when they are talking in such high praise, it allows the average fan to think a sky is the limit sort of thing. Right? When you're saying, oh, Victor Wembanyama, he can do this, 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 he can do this. Well, the average NBA fan is going to be projecting an image of what that should look like. And then next thing you know, the expectations are almost unreachable. So the normal struggles of an 82-game schedule against the best in the world, nope, doesn't matter. If he doesn't light it up on day one, I worry about a media that has been primed and just conditioned to believe he's not only a magician, he's a genie. And anything that he wants, he gets. That's probably not going to happen in his rookie year. He'll probably impress. He'll probably win player of the week a few times. But he's still going to go through the growing pains of an 82-game schedule with a bad basketball team. Wake Up Call continues.